What do you think about her testimony so far? To me, it's clear that the prosecutor who's involved, Mitchell, is trying to poke holes in her testimony, trying to find inconsistencies. But so far, and I'm asking you because I know that I have biases. So far, I have failed to see any holes in her testimony. I think that she's been pretty, not only credible, but I think she's been consistent in what she's been saying. Is there anything that Dr. Blasey Ford has said that stood out to you as a possible issue?
No, there wasn't anything up until kind of the end point. Where Mitchell had asked about kind of how you recall deep traumatic events. I think in part because we see Blasey Ford as having this PhD and being in psychology. So part of it's kind of like, well, shouldn't you know that if you really want to reach and access this point in your mind, that you're supposed to go through this process? But then, of course, as we noted, it screams back to the GOP, well, why didn't you ask for these things? And also, why don't we give her more time to do this?
Exactly.
As this has now just come to the forefront. Something that I think is really interesting with Mitchell and her questioning, as I had mentioned on Twitter, is that I don't think that she was looking to get more information and more details about the actual events that happened, because that's what Brett Kavanaugh is going to focus on. And Brett Kavanaugh, since we all had Blasey Ford's opening statement, Kavanaugh's prepared for that.
Right.
He's prepared to refute those facts. If Mitchell were to ask Blasey Ford during this testimony about new things, he's not going to be prepared to refute that.
Oh, it's such a
and
great
so
point.
And so that is why
that's such
Mitchell
a great point.
Didn't touch that. She's talking about flight plans. God, she might as well have been going off on frequent flyer miles. That's why they're dancing around all this stuff
right.
as opposed to the events. It's because he's not prepared to tell a lie about those things. And if he's not prepared and if he's not going to tell the truth, he's got to have a lie prepared for it. And they're not ready for that, so they're not going to touch it.
That is such a great point. And one thing that I did notice was an attempt to make it seem as though her accusations are strictly politically motivated.
Yes.
And so there was this one exchange that I thought was incredible. And it was when Mitchell was consistently asking about the polygraph test, who funded it.
Yes.
And she wouldn't just ask her the question. She was dancing around it, but she was trying to get to, hey, was this a politically funded lie detector test?
Yeah.
And I love that the lawyers for Dr. Blasey Ford, both of them jumped in and were like, let's cut to the chase. Okay, we told her to go do this lie detector test. And look, I understand the lack of credibility for lie detector tests. They're not 100% correct. But remember that this is not a criminal trial.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the results of that test are the end all be all. I don't think just because she passed that lie detector test, it means that the assault 100% did happen.
Yeah.
But it's still one piece of evidence that should be considered. And Republicans don't seem willing to consider it. Earlier in the hearing, they did not want to even talk about it.
Yes.
They refused the chart that was prepared by Dr. Blasey Ford's attorneys. But either way, the fact that they do not want the FBI investigation, they refused to get Mark Judge involved in the testimony, and the fact that they tried to omit the lie detector test results, and then later, you know, Mitchell tried to make it seem as though it was a politically motivated thing that was funded by, you know, Democrats. It gives you a sense of where the Senate Republicans are or what their strategy is moving forward.
Yeah, and something that I kind of thought was a little interesting for my criminal justice background, it's like if she's sitting for this polygraph coming off the heels of her grandmother's funeral, so you're around all those negative emotions and you're essentially are right there on the heels of that for the fact that you got to take it in this hotel conference room or whatever. How hard is it to tell a lie when you're already emotional? Like you can't it adds an added layer of complication and your thought process is a little bit jumbled. So part of me is like the fact that you passed a polygraph when you're already under stressful conditions, as far as I was concerned, going down that line of questioning, I think she kind of, that's why Mitchell was like, okay, I'm just gonna stop there.
Yeah.
Cause it just bolsters kind of just, as far as I'm concerned, the truth. Trustworthiness of her results in the polygraph.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. So what are you expecting in regard to Kavanaugh's testimony? There's some discussion about whether or not he is going to be angry in his opening statement, because remember, he's denying that any of this happened. He says that this is just a smear campaign by Democrats. And so before we heard some of Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony, there was some reporting indicating that Kavanaugh was going to take a more angry tone because he feels that, you know, he's being targeted, that he's the real victim here. But now following some of Dr. Blasey Ford's testimony, he's probably going to adjust the tone and be more indignant as opposed to angry.
I agree. And I also wouldn't be surprised if he tried to play the victim, because she comes off as so innocent and sweet and vulnerable that if he were to come off very forceful, it would let people in on there is another side of you. You are angry. Oh goodness, you know. And so I think that would just be unbelievably foolish that he should, if he was going to play it off, to just try to pretend to be just as innocent, kind, and vulnerable and kind of just make it seem like she's a very nice woman. I respect her. You know, but that wasn't me. And so I think if he's coached well, that's the kind of that's the avenue he's going to take. I just think it'll be really interesting, because as we saw in his initial hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee, you know, he was kind of just wiggling around questions and just really kind of doing almost a legal thing just by playing on words. And I don't think that the Democrats are going to be down for it. And I think Kamala is really going to go in.
Yeah.
And it's not going to be pretty.
I am looking forward to her line of questioning when Kavanaugh is testifying. I really am. Because regardless of what you think about Senator Harris or her politics or her positions on policy, the one thing that she has proven time and time again is that she really thrives in these types of settings.
Yes.
And I know that she is going to be aggressive in the best possible way.
Yes.
I think that her line of questioning will be well prepared. And by the way, speaking of which, this is something that I talked about on Damage Report, which is John Iadarola's show on our network. This, and again, this is my perspective. It appears that Democrats really did show up prepared, whereas Republicans, and maybe this is, you know, a way of noting their entitlement, like they just think, well, we're good. Like, we're going to get what we want. But they did not seem prepared.
No.
You know, Senator Grassley's opening statements, disaster.
Yes.
It seemed like it was prepared for him, which is fine. I know that that happens with our lawmakers quite often. But more importantly, it seemed like he had read those statements for the first time ever as this hearing was taking place, because he was stumbling all over the words, you know, mispronounced things, misspoke on a few occasions. How, this is a serious hearing.
It is, it is. It's very much of consequence. And it's interesting too, because several of the statements he made, and then we saw on Twitter, it gets, you know, lit up by Michael Avenatti, who's posting screenshots, or Ronan Farrow retweeted something that Deborah Ramirez's counsel had essentially shown, we made this effort, we made ourselves available, here are the screenshots. And so it just really kind of just makes their credibility and veracity. It undermines it significantly when you're coming up here and reading this into the record when it doesn't seem to be accurate.
Yeah, there was this sense of, we got this in the bag.
Yeah.
You know, we don't need to worry about anything. That's the sense that I'm getting, because they're just so incredibly unprepared. And maybe they didn't feel like they needed to prepare so much because they have a prosecutor asking the questions for them. You know, they're not the ones who have to ask the questions. They're not the ones who need to worry about the political consequences of asking a question that's maybe inappropriate or insensitive.
Although the question she asked, part of me is like, they could have done that themselves. They weren't asking, she wasn't asking intimate questions or things that, you know, would have brought forward to tears. Like, her questions were very, you know, above the surface. And so part of me is like, why did you have her here?
Right.
But it helps them give off the optics of it. But it just made no sense for the line of questioning she was going for.
Right. I mean, yeah. And who knows? Maybe Mitchell is more measured in how she asks the questions. I mean, can you imagine Ted Cruz asking some of these questions? I mean, I it's not just about the underlying question, it's about how you deliver it.
Very true.
And
very
so true. If I were Ted Cruz, I would be very concerned about, you know, the wording or how it would come off. Ted Cruz is not known for being a great speaker or someone who's sensitive to these types of issues. So I think it was a calculated move to have Mitchell do this for them.
Which is almost very sad.
Yeah.
Because you would like to think that if these individuals are going to represent their constituents, that they are versatile in, you know, how they present themselves. But
so let's talk a little bit about Republican women who are supportive of Kavanaugh and want him confirmed as a Supreme Court justice. So there are protests, as you can imagine, while this hearing is taking place. And on one side, you have women who are protesting the notion of Kavanaugh becoming a Supreme Court justice. And then on the other side, you have Women for Kavanaugh. And so far, things are peaceful, and that's great. And I believe in our First Amendment rights to protest, regardless of what you believe or what you support. But I do wonder how it is that you, as a woman, you can hear such serious allegations and still be so vocally supportive of Kavanaugh. Because at this point, you don't know for sure that he's innocent, right? Yeah. And so it's one thing to be at home thinking, I don't know, I feel like these women might be lying, this might be a political stunt. It's another thing to go out there, put your face out there and say, no, support Kavanaugh. At the same time, there are women who have been, or Republicans, I should be clear. Republicans were polled, and the poll question asked, if Kavanaugh did this, should, does it matter? Do you think he should still be confirmed as Supreme Court justice? Yes. And the majority of Republicans said, yeah, he should still be confirmed.
Yes.
So why is that?
Well, society holds women in a low regard. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, and they really display that in their decisions. And it is kind of, it really permeates every aspect of our lives. We're just so normalized to it. And I think that this is just a reflection of it. The fact that we don't value women or young women, and the thought that certain members of society can access women at all times. Like Kamala Harris had pointed out, you know, are there any other laws in the books that control anyone else's body? The fact that our society still feels it's okay to control women's bodies speaks to the fact that we're still seen as being objects, at least in certain regards. And so I am not shocked, or it's right, it's par for course. And I also think a number of these women, number one, we run into the issue of these women themselves have having these experiences, and they want to normalize it or just kind of deflect and not deal with the fact that that was wrong, and what you've experienced makes you a victim, or you know, have to deal with that. And then also there are a number of women who just feed into the patriarchy, and just that's a normalized thing, so they just prefer to go along that route. And then there are people who are just playing on teams of Democrat, Republican, which is unfortunate. Either way, it's just sad.
I mean, I wonder what the reaction would be if the shoe were on the other foot. How would Democratic women respond to a Supreme Court nominee who is a Democrat, who is liberal, but has these very serious allegations against him?
I think it'd be just about the same.
You do? Really?
I really do.
I'm curious. I don't know.
I sincerely do, because I just think people are just so normalized to, there are things they're willing to overlook when they happen to certain people. And when it happens to a young woman, you know, the excuses we had, oh, he was 17, or oh, he was this, or just ignoring the other allegations against them. You know, I feel like I spent most of the week on social media standing up for good men, because the thought is not every man does this.
Right.
And for Trump to post these, you know, tweets that are normalizing, oh, all men should be scared, we've heard, no, this is not
normal. It's insulting.
Normal.
It's insulting to men in general, right?
Thank
because
you.
Not every man does it. That's such a great point. Speaking of Donald Trump, yesterday he had this insane nearly hour and a half press conference. And the press conference happened so late in the day, we weren't able to cover it on the Young Turks on the main show. But I wanted to listen to it this morning as I was driving into work, and he talked about the sexual allegations against him.
Yes.
And he made up all this nonsense about how those women were paid off to come forward with those allegations against him. And you and I spoke about it a little off camera, and you talked about, you know, some of these defamation lawsuits that they filed against him.
Yeah.
And he's giving them more fodder. I mean, he's giving them more evidence for the defamation lawsuits. But I do want you to talk a little more about that as well. Where does he, and in particular, the Republican Party, where do they get the idea that women are getting paid off? He said one woman had her mortgage paid off.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, like, we've seen it time and time again, unfortunately, of these fabrications are just straight lies. And so that we've never seen any evidence of a lot of these things. They've also been counter to the things we do have facts to support. And so it just continues to be this gaslighting theory. And it's playing into this ideology that women lie. And it provides more to bolster that by saying, oh, well, they got money for it, then it gives them a motive as opposed to just being liars. Because then it gives other people something to hang their hat on. Because once we debunk the theory that all women lie and women must be liars, and we realize, oh, well, I guess some women tell the truth, now he gives that extra step of saying, oh, but it was for money. Mm-hmm. And so people can say, oh, well, I could see why they would lie for money. You know, it just, all he's doing is trying to continue to unfortunately gaslight people.
And by the way, speaking of politics, I want to address this because it's important. So when you have accusations against a Democratic lawmaker, Democrats will immediately reject that lawmaker. Yes. I mean, Al Franken, I mean, to be fair, with Al Franken, there was overwhelming evidence.
Yes, that's correct.
And what Al Franken did was not the same as attempted rape. Let's just be clear about that. What he did with that photo was unacceptable, and Democrats held him accountable for that. They didn't make excuses for him. Roy Moore, you have Republicans who not only make excuses for him, but they aggressively continue to endorse him.
Yes.
It seems like there is a difference in the way our political parties handle cases of sexual assault and alleged rape.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. It's you know, the Democratic Party takes a more progressive mindset of respecting women. They're definitely along that line. You know, there are always culprits, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But then we realize that the Republican Party, the GOP, you know, Trump rose to power on this whole Make America Great Again, trying to get it to this 1950s,
right,
60s mentality. And back then, women took their sexual assaults in silence.
That's
they didn't
right.
challenge men. And so trying to continue to ride that wave of we don't care, a man's word is good enough, or a white privileged man's word is good enough. If you say it didn't happen, it didn't happen, is that 1950s mentality that Trump rose to power on. So it's
That's
just
a yeah.
matter of kind of what ideologies both parties are pushing. And so I kind of think that's also why the Republican Party gets a lot of these older women or these privileged women who can co-sign into that. Because a lot of their lives are built around that, still built around that premise of
yeah.
having a man in the traditional roles and keeping a traditional home, as opposed to the more progressive Democratic stance.
Exactly. You know, one of the things that I was even so naive of and so unaware of until, I wouldn't say recently, but for a long time I thought, no, but women are good. We're good.
Like, I thought the same thing.
Right? Like,
I
thought, okay, like, let's stop playing the victims, we have equality, let's move on. But then I started realizing more and more, first of all, a lot of the equality didn't come 100 years ago. It
no.
came in recent decades, right? So for instance, the right to even have a credit card wasn't given to women until the 1970s. That was not that long ago.
No, it wasn't. And
right.
the fact that like our parents, I think my parents were like, I don't know, 20 or something like that. It's people grew up in a time mm-hmm. where women didn't have the same rights. And those people are still playmakers right now. And they spent half of their life without the rights that we had. So there is kind of a reason why these like subset of society continues to act like we're back in the day. Because
right.
they grew up in that day. And that's what they know.
Yeah, and I do think it's important to go back and talk about what Trump really meant when he said make America great again.
Yeah.
Because why did people feel so strongly about that? Why is it that Trump pulled way better with older voters as opposed to millennials? Many millennials didn't vote. They were angry at what was going on during that election.
Yes.
They were angry at what happened to Bernie Sanders. So a lot of them either voted for a third party or they stayed home. They certainly didn't vote for Trump. Trump did not do well with young voters. But he did tremendously well with older voters.
Yep. It's a thought that things were good back then, you know. Also, mm-hmm. it was pre-affirmative action, and also a lot of minorities, people of color, they were blocked from certain things, and so there was less competition. And that seems very much kind of the hidden speaking in code platform that you were running on.
Right.
You know, because it's the thought of great again. Well, when was it great?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. And any time in the past, it's been worse for people of color, LGBTQ community. Like, it's all been not as great for everyone else. So it's kind of like, if that's what you considered great, okay, we see.
And this is why we're seeing so many women step up to the plate and yeah. run for office, you
yeah.
know? And if ever you could take a silver lining from this disastrous administration and all the controversy and scandal that's come from it, that silver lining is that women are empowered,
yes.
they're running, they're fighting, and It's something that's personally inspired me.
Yes.
I do not have the courage to run for office. I don't really want to be part of that world, but other women are stepping up to the plate and it does inspire me. It makes me so proud.
You would be phenomenal.
No, I can't. I would not be able to. I think that I would get in trouble.
Yeah.
As a lawmaker, because I couldn't stay calm during that hearing.
Yes.
You know, I wouldn't be able to hold back and be, you know, this professional buttoned up person who doesn't jump in and say like, what the F is going on right now?
Yeah.
So I don't think that it's for me, but there are a lot of other passionate women out there who I think are gonna make a difference, and they're making a difference right now. By the way, women of both political parties, I want to see more female representation in both political parties, and we are getting a little bit of that.
Yes,
a lot of that.
With you more.
Exactly. Would we be able to take a break, guys, just for 5 minutes or so? Okay, great. So we're going to take a quick break. I want to regroup, just check some of the news wires, see what's going on, see if there's been any reaction that's worth updating you on, and we will be right back.
Or to be determined, does he survive this? Will he be confirmed by the Senate?
I think it's indicative that the Senate already scheduled to vote in the morning before
committee vote.
Ford even testified. So yeah, and I assume that with the Republican majority there that it would pass. So I assume that they're going to go ahead and try to get this passed through before the November midterms, because I think they probably fear that their majority in the Senate could be lost then, and they on Kavanaugh for some reason. So
okay, Lance, thank you. We're going to move on, and they schedule that 3 days in order to announce a committee hearing, and of course they can always cancel it, but it is scheduled to take place tomorrow morning at 9:30 in the morning. A key Republican senator and a key defender of Judge Brett Kavanaugh, Senator John Cornyn, telling Fox News, and this is a tweet from Fox News, that the Texas Republican said, quote, "I found no reason to find her not credible." Let's go to Annie next from Gardner, Kansas, Democrats line. Annie, you with us?
Yeah, hi.
Hello, go ahead, please.
I've been listening to some of the comments. I wanted to say you had a commenter or a few moments ago who was talking about her own sexual assault, and one, it's never your fault, no matter how far you are. Two, I've been watching the trial as well, it seems like a trial, sorry.
It's a hearing.
Yeah. And I find Dr. Ford fairly credible. Again, she's got no reason to go through this. They are crucifying her, I feel like. The Democrats are not doing themselves any favors right now. It seems like they're kind of crawling up her butt a bit. Why aren't they asking her any questions either? They should be furthering the process along as much as they can, too. I mean, other than griping about the fact that we don't have an investigation, we know we don't have an investigation.
Annie, thank you for the call. And of course, the rule was that each senator would have 5 minutes. So Christine Blasey Ford's questioning is over. Up next is Judge Brett Kavanaugh. And a follow-up tweet, this from Senator John Cornyn's office, writing the following: "But we haven't heard from Judge Kavanaugh yet, and no corroboration for her allegations. We need to consider all the evidence to see whether burden of proof has been met." That from Republican Senator John Cornyn of Texas. Kevin from Brighton, Massachusetts, on the Republican line. What have you seen so far, Kevin? What do you think?
Well, thanks for taking my call. I went in to watch this hearing because I really didn't know what to think. The whole thing's been a real circus. But honestly, after it, I got to say, I was totally stunned by my perceived cowardice from the folks in my own party. I mean, we got, what is it, 6 Republican senators up there, and none of them are going to ask their own questions.
They're 11. Just gonna there are 11.
Give it to 11, sorry. There's 11 Republican senators, and they're all, they put a prosecutor in front to ask her questions like she's on trial for something that happened. I got to say, I didn't believe Dr. Ford at the beginning of the day. At the end of the day, I'm pretty sure what she said was the truth. And I'm worried that Kavanaugh is still going to get confirmed, but I don't want to see that guy on a court. I'm a Republican. I just don't want to see it happen.
Kevin, thank you. Let's go next to Ann, joining us from Pittston, Pennsylvania, Democrats line. Good afternoon, Ann.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to reiterate one of your other previous callers, Cheryl, claimed that she wasn't blameless. sweetheart, as someone who is a victim and who was abused in every way possible, both sexually, physically, and mentally, you are not at fault. No victim of abuse is at fault. Sorry. And I'm deeply dismayed at the conduct of our Congress and our elected officials. I can't even believe that this is falling on party lines. Mm-hmm. This should transcend party lines. We should not want someone who could be a potential sexual predator to be in the highest office of the land, determining the value and worth of women's bodies. And I can say as a victim of abuse that I empathize and understand her point of view. My own stepfather, he twisted my arm repeatedly until it almost broke. My mother took me to the ER, and I told a room full of doctors and medical personnel what had happened. They told me that because he had not broken my arm, that there was nothing that could be done. I don't remember how I got to the hospital. I don't remember the doctors' names or their faces. I don't remember how I got home from the hospital. But I do remember my stepfather absolutely was the individual responsible for my being there. So I really think that it's time that victims start talking about their stories and people start listening and believing them.
And let me ask you about your situation in terms of your father. Did you press any charges? How old were you at the time?
I was young. I eventually did take out a PFA against my stepfather. I was in high school. I was a senior in high school. I actually had a judge tell me that if I didn't like the abuse, that I should just leave because I was an adult.
And what about your mom at the time? Did you confide in her?
She condoned it. Of course she knew. She condoned it.
Why?
I don't know, because she was abused as a child herself, and she thought, you know, she deserved it. I don't know. She's still married to him. You'd have to ask her. I've been struggling my whole life trying to understand why. You feel worthless. You feel not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Because, you know, and one of the things...
I don't think I will ever get over this my entire life.
One of the things that has come up is that she is now coming forward 36 years after the fact. Can you relate to that?
Yeah, of course I can. I mean, I came out to many, many people, and I wasn't believed. I told people, and they would say, well, the foster care system is no better. It's rife with abuse. So this is everywhere. This is pervasive mm-hmm. throughout our culture. And I really think it's time that we, I know I sound angry because I am.
No, you have every right to feel that way.
It's time that we as a country start dealing with these issues. Abuse is around us. It's everywhere. And we need to start recognizing it for what it is.
And what are you doing today?
What am I doing today? Mm-hmm. I'm watching the Senate hearings.
What have you done since your abuse? How have you moved on with your life is what I meant to ask.
I feel like I'm trapped. I didn't do well in school. So I wasn't able to get a formal education. I'm unemployed. I've worked in customer service and I had to deal with screaming customers, which is another form of trauma. I probably have PTSD that's undiagnosed. But I can't get medical treatment, mm-hmm. and I'm 34 years old. I haven't had health insurance since I was 16. So I imagine that there's many people in my shoes that are suffering in the same ways that I am, and they're not getting the help or the treatment that they need, and they're not living fulfilling lives. And I'm really sad. I'm really sad. And they tried to shame her. I've seen comments online, people trying to shame Ford for being successful, for persevering despite the abuse she endured.
Hey, Ann, hang in there.
Disgusting.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks.
We appreciate it. From Pittston, Pennsylvania, Senator Dianne Feinstein is the ranking Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And just a short while ago with this tweet, what I find most inexcusable is this rush to judgment, the unwillingness to take these kinds of allegations at face value and look at them for what they are, a real question of character for someone who is asking for a lifetime appointment on the Supreme Court. Next is Jody Lynn joining us from West Jordan, Utah, Republican line. You've watched the proceedings thus far. What do you think?
Well, after that last lady, I kind of got lost in it all. I'm sorry. I'm an older lady. I'm in my 60s. And I got a couple of little things before I get into this.
Certainly.
I got two stories about my situations, what I went through in my life. I had an older gentleman when I was 16, actually my boyfriend's dad, who raped me. And his son actually had to pull him off of me, my boyfriend, but his brother. And then I tried to get away, and he tried to run me over in the field while I was trying to get away. If that wasn't bad enough, then my father raped me.
Oh my.
So I couldn't even tell my father about this stuff, okay? And I blocked this all out of me. Just like they said, 8 years I blocked my dad out. And I didn't tell anybody about it because it was what they call suppressed memory.
Can I stop you at that point? Because that's come up. Why are victims so reluctant to talk about it, to speak out?
Well, I really didn't remember my dad at all. I didn't. He said, don't tell your mom, she'll leave me. And from that point on, I did not remember.
So you blocked
and
it out.
I did remember. I blocked it totally. I don't remember, sweetie. I really did not remember. And one day I was mad, and I told him he's going to be sorry. And my mom came home from work, and it just came out like I don't even know where. It just came right out of my mouth, and it just shocked me. You know what I'm saying? It just shocked me. But when I remembered every little detail. I mean, I remembered everything. And then years later, when I was up in Wamsutter, Wyoming, working in the oil field, one day, my ex-boyfriend's brother came in 30 years later, and that's when I remember about his dad. And that was 30 years later. So, yeah, you suppress this stuff, just like this lady says. But when I remembered every detail. I remembered every place. I remembered the place. I mean everything.
Why do you think you blocked it out in your mind? Do you, any
because it was just something that just suppressed it. I didn't want to remember it. I did not want to remember it. It was horrible.
Mm-hmm. How old are you now, Jenny Lynn?
I'm in my 60.
So this is what, 47 years ago?
I was on the honor roll through my health schooling, so I was totally different than this lady. And I used to make good money all through my when I worked. You know, I always worked a man's job. I always made good money. I worked in the oil field, drove semi-truck. No, I had a good job.
Everyone, welcome back. We are doing live coverage of the hearing, and they are still on recess. However, there are some things that we wanted to talk about, and we just had this incredible conversation over the break. And as you know, or may not know, Adrian has a legal background, and we talked about some of the excuses that are coming from Republicans, both Republican voters, but also Republican lawmakers, including this idea that if Kavanaugh did do this when he was 17, the attempted rape allegations, if he did actually do this, is it really that big of a deal because he was 17 at the time and people are able to change? And the argument that I've been making on the main show is that, well, look, if he's doing something like, let's say, using drugs or shoplifting, yes, I think that people do have the ability to change. They grow, they mature, and it would be unfair to hold those things against them because there is the ability to mature. But when it comes to something like attempted rape, I see that as something different. I think that that says something about your character. And so when I brought that up over the break, you added your legal expertise to that. So I wanted you to share that with our audience as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, as you kind of pointed out, this isn't a crime that's like car auto theft or something. It's the way they classify crimes in kind of this old world legal sense in its origins are you have male in se and male prohibitum. Male in se, those are ones that by their very nature, they are against natural law, like murder, rape, things you instinctively, inherently know to be wrong. And then there are the male prohibitum things, which are just like don't smoke weed, you know, prostitution, anything that is just illegal because the government largely says we shouldn't do this. Don't drive over the speed limit, you know, as opposed to things that are innately wrong by human nature standards. And rape is one of those where people know it's wrong and it goes against all sense of your being as a human being to force yourself onto and into someone else. And so that's the biggest issue here, as far as I'm concerned, because again, you're not stealing a car. You're violating the laws of nature and forcing yourself on someone for whatever kind of gratification that you want.
Yes, yeah, so there is a difference in terms of a legal standard, and also obviously based on just human perception. You know, it was my human perception to think attempted rape is different from breaking other laws, and I guess there are legal standards for that as well, and that's good to know.
And there was actually a time in our country, the Supreme Court had ended up saying you can't do it, but where they were giving the death penalty for rape, which says innately how bad we think it is of a crime. And the Supreme Court ultimately went away where they said, no, you can't kill people for rape anymore. We're not going to do that. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. It still speaks to the origins of the fact that we've known this to be something really bad since the origin of mankind.
Exactly.
So for people to kind of just say, oh, he was 17, it's like, oh, he was a human being. He knew instinctively that this is wrong.
Exactly. And by the way, if Kavanaugh were a Democrat, if he were a progressive, and these accusations came out against him, don't want him confirmed as a Supreme Court justice. For me, of course I care about politics, but when it comes to something like this, you have to put politics aside.
Yes.
And so whether it is a Republican administration or a Democratic administration, you have to do the right thing. Because again, if it is proven that he has done this, okay, and he is confirmed as a Supreme Court justice, he is going to make decisions. He is going to hand down decisions that affect the lives of everyone, not just women, everyone in the country.
Yeah.
And that is terrifying. It's a scary thing to think about.
Absolutely.
And I just, you know, he says he wants a fair hearing. He said that dozens of times during his interview with Fox News. I do not believe that this has been a fair hearing so far. They are treating Dr. Blasey Ford as if she's on trial, when in reality, Brett Kavanaugh is being interviewed for one of the most important jobs in the country. They are employing a prosecutor to carry out the line of questioning. They are using these ridiculous 5-minute intervals to carry out the line of questioning. And I don't think that that's a fair way or even the most effective way to get to the bottom of the truth. They're refusing an FBI investigation, which would provide a more extensive background check on Kavanaugh and possibly get to the bottom of the truth. It's just, it's frustrating to see how this is playing out. This is not a fair hearing.
No.
But even given the significant obstacles that Dr. Blasey Ford is dealing with here, I think that her testimony has been powerful. And I think that Republicans are very much concerned about how this is coming off.
Yep. I think I kind of got the sense that there is really no doubt in whether or not she's telling the truth.
Right.
And so otherwise, you'd want to do more of an investigation so we could find evidence to discredit her. And the fact that they don't even want to do the FBI investigation, it just speaks volumes.
It does.
Otherwise, you know, you'd be okay with what you found. And I don't think they'd be okay.
So let's talk about Lindsey Graham.
Okay.
Wow. So currently the hearing is on recess, 45-minute recess. And during this recess, Lindsey Graham spoke to reporters and said some pretty terrible things. And we have video to show you. Let's take a look at that and we'll comment.
What happened to her, I don't know. Why don't you believe him? What is it about him you don't want to believe? I know why they don't want to believe him. They were going to vote no matter what. They've tried to destroy this guy's life with one accusation after another, that he's a serial rapist. That some woman said, I went to 10 parties where they're drug and raping people. I don't believe that one bit.
So, I mean, anyone can turn that question around on him.
Yes.
Why don't you believe her?
Because America was great when we just believed what a man said.
Exactly, exactly.
So why are we not going back to when we're supposed to have it like this?
Yeah. Lindsey Graham was approached by a rape survivor after that, confronted, and then he made himself out to be a victim. I feel like I'm being, I forget the exact wording, but he essentially accused everyone of kind of ganging up on him.
Yeah.
Because he's the real victim here. Lindsey Graham is the real victim. Look, you if you don't want to believe her, if you think she's lying and that Brett Kavanaugh is telling the truth, then get the FBI involved to do an extensive background check.
Yep.
Because there are a number of people who have been named in this hearing. Okay. Mark Judge could have testified. How come you're not fighting for that? I mean, if I genuinely believe that Brett Kavanaugh was honest and that he was innocent and this is nothing more than a smear campaign, I would be fighting so aggressively to ensure that we have further investigation to clear his name. Because look, what does he think is going to happen? What does he think is going to happen? Best case scenario for the Republicans is that they do the vote tomorrow, which, by the way, they're planning on still doing the vote tomorrow, mm-hmm. which is insane. But let's say they do the vote and somehow miraculously they manage to confirm him. You're comfortable with a huge portion of the country believing that Brett Kavanaugh attempted to rape someone?
Yeah.
Is Brett Kavanaugh comfortable with that?
Exactly. And also, if more things come out, who knows? He could be prosecuted at a later date, or also lying before Congress. All these things could come up. You know, this has happened before when we had a federal judge, Southern District of Texas, Samuel Kent, mm-hmm. how he was prosecuted while a sitting federal judge for sex crimes of assaulting women. And we end up in a situation where he's impeached, he ends up going to prison. It just was a stain for the Republican Party and also for the judiciary. Why are we going to be in this situation again? Supreme Court justices are not immune from liability. They are not above the law.
That's such a good point. Do you think that there could possibly be, because right now there is no criminal investigation.
Correct.
This is a hearing to determine whether or not these senators will confirm him as a Supreme Court justice. Do you think that there is a possibility, or what do you think is the likelihood that a criminal investigation will take place?
I think it'll depend on what kind of facts come out more, in part because like Blasey Ford, the events happened, I believe, in 1982. And so Maryland had like a 1-year statute of limitations during that time. But
jeez.
Maryland is since to have a statute of limitations, it doesn't have one, for sexual assault, attempted sexual assault. And if these things have been going on for years and he crosses the threshold and there are events or allegations and factual things about events that happened in that span of time of which Maryland having no statute of limitations, because who knows who else can come forward, then essentially, you know, he's really up the creek. There could be a lot of problems. And you don't want somebody on the bench who's out on bail. Like, and also you don't want somebody in a position where, let's say, a woman comes forward and essentially put you in the situation where you can be bribed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's mm-hmm. something that the FBI look for when they do investigations, which is why they look into your financial background and mm-hmm. everything to see, can you be in a situation where you're compromised because you have these things going on that, you know, aren't good for you? And he does. That's the thing. Like, I don't care about the political parties. I really don't care. I care about somebody not being in a position to be compromised moving forward, because I don't know, what if a case came up and that party says, hey, we have this dirt on you. We need you to rule this way. Otherwise, we're going to expose it.
Right.
That's why they jump in your background and get to the nitty gritty, and why they want people with a clean history or who put their mess out there so it can't be used against them.
You know, speaking about the limitations, there were more accusations that came out
yes.
yesterday. This was after we wrapped up the main show, but some of these accusations date back to 1998.
Yeah.
I don't know all the details, and it's not just me. We don't know all the details of those allegations. Very few details have come out, and those victims have decided to remain anonymous. So at the moment, I believe that we have no idea what their identities are, but nonetheless, it dates back to 1998. And if they are credible, that could really hurt Kavanaugh in terms of a criminal investigation. And of course, we know that the investigation would have to take place on a state level. So you would need state prosecutors to get involved and want to do something about it.
And Maryland's prosecutors already said, hey, we're down, come this way. The police are like, we'll investigate this. So even if they could not proceed because of the statute of limitations, having their investigation and their stamp on it,
mm-hmm.
it's important for the fact gathering process, but also to move things along. It's just this man should not even be here. Like, we should not be here as a nation.
We shouldn't have gotten to this point.
It's compromised.
Right, exactly. Well, thank you for watching. We will be back. We're going to take a short break.
Yeah. have gone into a back room off to the side. Take Kavanaugh into the back room. You'll be seeing him in a moment.
Judge Kavanaugh, we welcome you. Are you ready? I have something I want to clear up from the last meeting.
Special thanks to Adrienne for she's amazing,
fantastic,
so good, and I'm so glad that she joined us to share her legal expertise with us.
To Senator Kennedy,
with that said, the hearing has begun again. Brett joins in, and let's get started. Let's hear what we have to say.
Dr. Ford said, "We're also at the party. These statements were provided to us under penalty of felony by lying to, if you lie to Congress. As soon as my team learned the names of these three potential witnesses, we immediately reached out to them requesting an interview. In response, all three submitted statements to us denying any knowledge of the gathering Dr. Ford described. If we had calls with them, we would have invited the minority to join. Every time that we've received any information regarding Judge Kavanaugh, we've sought to immediately follow through and investigate. The minority staff sat on Dr. Ford's letter for weeks, and staff told us that they believed it is, quote, highly inappropriate to have these follow-up calls before the FBI finishes its investigation," end of quote, even though the FBI had completed its background information. When we followed up with Judge Kavanaugh after we received Dr. Ford's allegations, the ranking member staff didn't join us, even though these calls are usually done on a bipartisan basis. They joined other calls with the judge, but they didn't participate or ask any questions. Would you please rise, sir?
Yes.
I love how he's accusing partisanship. Look, don't get me wrong, there's partisanship on both sides, but I mean, the Republicans' actions here have been disgusting, deplorable. They do not want further investigation.
It's been absolutely proven that Senator, he has lied under oath before during a confirmation
hearing.
That's
whatever time you want now for your opening statement.
The radar.
The radar because of the more identifiable thing, which is something like sexual assault. But he's already been proven to have lied. Here's his opening statement.
Ranking Member Feinstein, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to make my statement. I wrote it myself yesterday afternoon and evening. No one has seen a draft or it, except for one of my former law clerks. This is my statement. Less than 2 weeks ago, Dr. Ford publicly accused me of committing wrongdoing at an event more than 36 years ago, when we were both in high school. I denied the allegation immediately, categorically, and unequivocally. All four people allegedly at the event, including Dr. Ford's longtime friend, Ms. Kaiser, have said they recall no such event. Her longtime friend, Ms. Kaiser, said under penalty of felony that she does not know me and does not believe she ever saw me at a party ever. Here is the quote from Ms. Kaiser's attorney's letter. Quote, simply put, Ms. Kaiser does not know Mr. Kavanaugh, and she has no recollection of ever being at a party or gathering where he was present with or without Dr. Ford. End quote. Think about that fact. The day after the allegation appeared, I told this committee that I wanted a hearing as soon as possible to clear my name. I demanded a hearing for the very next day. Unfortunately, it took the committee 10 days to get to this hearing. In those 10 long days, as was predictable and as I predicted, my family and my name have been totally and permanently destroyed by vicious and false additional accusations. The 10-day delay has been harmful to me and my family, to the Supreme Court, and to the country. When this allegation first arose, I welcomed any kind of investigation, Senate, FBI, or otherwise. The committee now has conducted a thorough investigation, and I've cooperated fully. I know that any kind of investigation, Senate, FBI, Montgomery County Police, whatever, will clear me. Listen to the people I know. Listen to the people who have known me my whole life. Listen to the people I've grown up with and worked with and played with and coached with and dated and taught and gone to games with and had beers with. And listen to the witnesses who allegedly were at this event 36 years ago. Listen to Ms. Kaiser. She does not know me. I was not at the party described by Dr. Ford. This confirmation process has become a national disgrace. The Constitution gives the Senate an important role in the confirmation process, but you have replaced advice and consent with search and destroy. Since my nomination in July, there's been a frenzy on the left to come up with something, anything, to block my confirmation. Shortly after I was nominated, the Democratic Senate leader said he would, quote, oppose me with everything he's got. A Democratic senator on this committee publicly referred to me as evil. Evil. Think about that word. And said that those who supported me were, quote, complicit in evil. Another Democratic senator on this committee said, quote, Judge Kavanaugh is your worst nightmare. A former head of the Democratic National Committee said, quote, Judge Kavanaugh will threaten the lives of millions of Americans for decades to come. I understand the passions of the moment, but I would say to those senators, your words have meaning. Millions of Americans listened carefully to you. Given comments like those, is it any surprise that people have been willing to do anything, to make any physical threat against my family, to send any violent email to my wife, to make any kind of allegation against me and against my friends, to blow me up and take me down? You sowed the wind. For decades to come, I fear that the whole country will reap the whirlwind. The behavior of several of the Democratic members of this committee at my hearing a few weeks ago was an embarrassment. But at least it was just a good old-fashioned attempt at borking. Those efforts didn't work. When I did at least okay enough at the hearings that it looked like I might actually get confirmed, a new tactic was needed. Some of you were lying in wait and had it ready. This first allegation was held in secret for weeks by a Democratic member of this committee and by staff. It would be needed only if you couldn't take me out on the merits. When it was needed, this allegation was unleashed and publicly deployed over Dr. Ford's wishes. And then, as no doubt was expected, if not planned, came a long series of false last-minute smears designed to scare me and drive me out of the process before any hearing occurred. Crazy stuff. Gangs, illegitimate children, fights on boats in Rhode Island, all nonsense reported breathlessly and often uncritically by the media. This has destroyed my family and my good name, a good name built up through decades of very hard work and public service at the highest levels of the American government. This whole two-week effort has been a calculated and orchestrated political hit, fueled with apparent pent-up anger about President Trump and the 2016 election, fear that has been unfairly stoked about my judicial record, revenge on behalf of the Clintons, and millions of dollars in money from outside left-wing opposition groups. This is a circus. The consequences will extend long past my nomination. The consequences will be with us for decades. This grotesque and coordinated character assassination will dissuade competent and good people of all political persuasions from serving our country. And as we all know, in the United States political system of the early 2000s, what goes around comes around. I am an optimistic guy. I always try to be on the sunrise side of the mountain, to be optimistic about the day that is coming. But today, I have to say that I fear for the future. Last time I was here, I told this committee that a federal judge must be independent, not swayed by public or political pressure. I said I was such a judge, and I am. I will not be intimidated into withdrawing from this process. You've tried hard. You've given it your all. No one can question your effort. But your coordinated and well-funded effort to destroy my good name and destroy my family will not drive me out. The vile threats of violence against my family will not drive me out. You may defeat me in the final vote, but you'll never get me to quit. Never. I'm here today to tell the truth. I've never sexually assaulted anyone, not in high school, not in college, not ever. Sexual assault is horrific. One of my closest friends to this day is a woman who was sexually abused and who in the 1990s, when we were in our 30s, confided in me about the abuse and sought my advice. I was one of the only people she consulted. Allegations of sexual assault must always be taken seriously, always. Those who make allegations always deserve to be heard. At the same time, the person who is the subject of the allegations also deserves to be heard. Due process is a foundation of the American rule of law. Due process means listening to both sides. As I told you at my hearing 3 weeks ago, I'm the only child of Martha and Ed Kavanaugh. They're here today. When I was 10, my mom went to law school. And as a lawyer, she worked hard and overcame barriers, including the workplace sexual harassment that so many women faced at the time and still face today. She became a trailblazer, one of Maryland's earliest women prosecutors and trial judges. She and my dad taught me the importance of equality and respect for all people, and she inspired me to be a lawyer and a judge. Last time I was here, I told you that when my mom was a prosecutor and I was in high school, she used to practice her closing arguments at the dining room table on my dad and me. As I told you, her trademark line was, use your common sense. What rings true? What rings false? Her trademark line is a good reminder as we sit here today, some 36 years after the alleged event occurred, when there is no corroboration, and indeed it is refuted by the people allegedly there. After I have been in the public arena for 26 years without even a hint, a whiff of an allegation like this, and when my nomination to the Supreme Court was just about to be voted on at a time when I'm called evil by a Democratic member of this committee, while Democratic opponents of my nomination say people will die if I am confirmed.